Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the podcast that takes a light-hearted look at lesser-known London stories with your own personal blue badge professional tourist guides.
She's Fiona.
And she's Alex.
And this is the Ladies Who London podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Ladies Who London podcast. Hello, Fee, how are you doing?
I am good. Yes, how are
good.
You?
Hello. I'm very well, thank you. What?
Hello
first as well. Yeah, absolutely. I am very, very well, thank you. Yeah, I am. Well, I've got a new housemate.
Yay.
He's not
in camera shot, so I haven't seen him yet.
He's still sleeping. He's doing a lot of sleeping. I've adopted a little dog, a little rescue dog, Rusty, who is just waking up. Oh, big stretch. I think it's illegal if a dog stretches and you don't go, oh, big stretch, I think.
Okay.
Is the actual, yeah. Okay. He's very sweet and I'm very happy he arrived on a Monday afternoon and it's all new and exciting and he's so lovely and I'm very, very happy.
It's good to mention him now, otherwise randomly during the episode when you kind of go, oh, hello, boy. Yeah. Listeners will be like, what?
And if he gets up here, there'll be clippy-clopping around the place. So you'll hear his little claws.
And then we'll be very excited.
Absolute cutest. And yeah, you guys will see him as well because he's currently snoozing away. He was doing some sleep woofs earlier, which was the cutest thing ever. Gang, you can expect some puppy spam in the next few weeks because that's all it's going to be about. But yeah.
Cool.
Have you got a puppy yet? No?
No.
Oh, disappointing.
No.
Oh, well.
I have got some dog news, but it's not as exciting as yours.
Okay.
Dog news from Jen Garibay, who got in touch when she got in touch when we said we were going to do Elizabeth Fry.
Right.
And she said, Elizabeth Fry, my dog is named after her brother-in-law. And Elizabeth Fry's brother-in-law is called Sir Thomas Fowell Buxton.
I mean, I like that.
So obviously I said, is that like his formal name? She said, well, only on formal occasions. That's what we
call. Oh, Jen, I want to know why he's called that. Because that's amazing.
Yeah. And then once we'd done the episode and she looked at it and she looked at the blog as well. And in the picture that is the picture on the banknote and the original version of that is in the blog, the man on the very far left in the glasses is Sir Thomas Fowell Buxton.
No.
So I was like, yes, because I was looking at the picture thinking, these people, they must be recognisable people. And that man in the glasses, they're distinctive glasses. We should know who he is. And we do.
That's amazing.
He's got a dog named after him.
Okay, so, Jen, I'm sorry. We're going to need more information. Why have you got a dog named after him? I need more. I need more. And any relation to Buxton as in anti-slavery Buxton?
Don't know.
Okay. Jen, do some digging. That's your job. Yeah. Do some digging and let us know. Yeah.
Oh, I've done that thing again where I haven't actually
pulled your mic out there.
tightened up my microphone. There we go. That's better.
The other thing I have to tell you this week is that it's a very exciting little project I've been working on for a while. I have recorded a series of audio tours of London with a company called Around.tours, I think is the website. We've done four tours. We've done a Westminster one, which is a kind of, you know, welcome to Westminster. So it's the Abbey and Buckingham Palace, but then lots of other little secret bits and pieces in the streets around. So all the stuff I do on a normal tour. We've got a Secrets of Covent Garden. We have a Blood and Guts and Crime and Punishment in the City of London. And then there's a Riverside one going from the Tower of London across Tower Bridge and down through Borough Market. And they're the only London tours. So each, what I like about this, because you and I get contacted a lot to do audio tours.
Yeah.
And there's millions and millions and millions.
Or variations on little, yeah.
Lots exactly. Of and when you look at the websites, there's sort of like 400 tours in London, and it's absolutely pointless. These guys only work with one guide per city. So if you book any of their London tours, you get me.
You are that guide.
I am that guide.
Very
so
good.
If you can't come to London, or you can do it then... like remotely as well, or if you come to London and you don't want to do a private tour, or you just want to kind of dip in and out, then there are four different tours, and you can buy either individual tours or packages. And if you're going to other cities, they've got other cities, and you can buy like packages for London tours and say Edinburgh or whatever you fancy. But go to my website, because there is now a section on my website that's got all the links and everything you need to know. Click on there, and then I get the kudos for it coming from me direct rather than doing it from the website. But you can go direct if you want to. But go to my website, and they're all on there. And I think they're like, I don't know, I should know the prices, shouldn't I? Let's have a quick look. Let's see.
Reasonably, very affordable, I'm going to guess.
Very affordable. Very. £500 each, something like that.
Oh, well.
Nah. Okay, so they're about £7 per... You can either get a 24-hour pass, which gives you, one or two tours in the same city. There's a three-day pass, and it goes up from there. So they start from about £7 per tour, which is, I think, pretty affordable, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there we go. Go and have a little look, and go and do some walking tours, and tell them I sent you.
Yay! Very good.
But that's been a bit of a labour of love at the start of this year. It's taken a lot of work and a lot of time and effort. So hopefully you'll all enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, this week, let's head straight on into the podcast, I think, shall we?
Why not?
This week, very special week indeed. It is the week of International Women's Day.
Dun, dun, dun. That's not the right sound effect, is it?
What is the right sound effect?
No, I can't. No.
Let's hear anyway. It for the boys. No, that's the wrong one.
No, not that one.
Anyway, it's International Women's Day. And of course, we always like to champion the women in history. But we've also got our own international woman who's joining us as a guest this
Yay!
Week. We've been promising a guest for a while and keep forgetting what week it is. And it is this week. And it's a repeater guest and one that you love. It is the fabulous Katie Wignall of Look Up London. Hello, Katie. Welcome.
Hello. I was going to go with Here Come the Girls.
Oh, yes.
Girls.
That's the one.
That'll
this
do.
That's why Fiona and I are rubbish.
All I got was girls just want to have fun. That was the...
Yeah, we want a bit more than that. We want to do audio tours as well. Anyway, Katie, how are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you. I was just chatting with Fiona. I did a tour today all about inspiring women of Bankside. So I'm up for talking about some more exciting women.
Oh, this is amazing. And we thought we would do something a little different this week. Because there's three of us, we thought we'd do three different women in London's history. And listeners, you can go and vote. We're back to the podcast pedestal type thing.
We're going to make it. Do
we
have to vote? Can we not just celebrate all of them?
I mean, we're going to celebrate all of them, but we're still going to vote because... Because what's life without a bit of competition? Just how we vary drastically. I'm like, let's do it, let's win. And Fiona's like, let's just all nice. Like, okay.
I think there's enough judging women already. Why do we have to buy into that?
We're not judging them. We're giving them a pedestal, and then we're...
I mean, they're all on the
judging
pedestal.
Judging the best, effectively. Fine. We don't have to vote, but we're going to give you the option.
I went to a comprehensive school. It's drilled into me. It's not about the winning. It's about the taking part.
Well, this is definitely all about the taking part. So we've got three very different women for you, gang. And I think we'll start with our guest, Katie. Who would you like to talk about and why?
Yes, I'm going to tell you about Bella Burge. So Bella Burge was also known as Bella of Blackfriars. And in a nutshell, she was the world's first female boxing promoter.
Ooh.
Yeah, so she's well equipped to come out fighting for this top spot.
Should
say
Fiona,
she never actually fought in the ring herself, I don't think. She was more on
the sidelines.
She
probably picked up a few tips along the way though, right?
Yeah, but I don't know if you guys know much about her, but I think you're going to really like her. She is well up both of your streets. So she was actually born in New York in 1877. But so she's born Leah Bella or Leah Bell Orchard. But then when she's 4 years old, her father dies. So she moves with her mother to London and she's straight in the UK in Whitechapel. Ooh, in the 1880s. Bit of a baptism of fire, yeah. And she actually makes her stage debut because she was a very talented kind of young lady, clearly, and family needed to make some money. So she makes her stage debut in 1888 at the age of 11 at the Pavilion Theatre on Whitechapel Road.
Wow.
Uh-huh. So... unfortunately, that no longer exists. It was, I think, blitzed and sort of bombed out and then demolished. But it was a really kind of top music hall venue. And she gets in with kind of music hall royalty, including the two sisters of Mary Lloyd. So Mary Lloyd is a very famous 19th century musical performer, and she even adopts the surname Lloyd. So she goes by Bella Lloyd because she's kind of touring with the younger sisters. And it's really sweet. Her and Mary Lloyd remain really close friends through all of her life, actually. Mary Lloyd's a bit older, but they're really close friends throughout. So it's while she's performing on stage that she comes across her husband, who is Richard, known as Dick Burge, and he was a former lightweight boxing champion, but he's retired. Wow. So he kind of sweeps her off her feet and they have this whirlwind romance, and within a year they're married. This is about 1900, and they get married, and then a month later he is sentenced to 10 years in jail for fraud.
So, oh, Belly, and now I have to pick
him. Oh, I know, quite the calm down. Now, I don't want to paint Dick Burge in a hugely bad light, because I think he may have been kind of corrupted and innocently followed this scheme to try and make money. Right, and it seems that when he was in prison, he was thoroughly well behaved, and he actually got let out early after only 8 years, because a riot broke out in the prison and he saved a guard's life. So he was let out early. So
impressive. You know,
that is good behavior.
That's what you want to do, get on the right
also,
side.
Yeah, probably for his own safety as well. But like, get this guy out of here, because he's on the wrong side. So he's out of prison. Him and Bella decide, you know, he used to be in boxing. So they decide to open their own boxing venue, and they choose a site, which is basically, if you come out of Southwark tube station today, there is a big glass building. And it's, I think, Home of Transport for London.
I think
it's
called
Palestra House. And that stands on what was the site of basically the Ring Boxing Club. So that opened in 1910. But what's really interesting is they repurposed an old building that was a church from the 1780s that was this amazing octagonal shape. And it was octagonal because the vicar who created it didn't want the devil to hide in any corners. Just like really mad. So this chapel that's kind of this round shape, you know, you can imagine Dick sort of striding in and being like, this will be a perfect boxing ring. It's derelict. They clear it all out. Bella has the idea to hire homeless local people to help them in exchange for later, when it's up and running, on days when they're not running boxing matches, she opens it as a soup kitchen for the local homeless. Yeah, so it's all,
genuinely,
it's all quite nice,
these
really.
Ideas that come up, oh, I think we've already lost Fiona, maybe we shouldn't make it a competitive thing. these ideas that these women have are just phenomenal. Love it.
Yeah,
it's amazing. And even better, like, there was a lot of pushback because everyone was like, oh, boxing matches, this is going to be really rowdy. And they got told no and no and no. And then apparently Bella went to the commissioners behind her husband's back and basically said, you know what, we're going to make it really respectable. It's going to be great. And then they got permission to open it, and she never told Dick what she'd done.
Because
so
probably
never knew.
Yeah, a woman saying that is going to be more convincing than a guy saying it somehow.
Especially a former sort of lightweight boxer. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's so they get it up and running May 1910. And you know, it's a pretty successful right at the beginning. I'll say now, I don't know anything about boxing, but these names are so great. So these might mean something to other people, but I just thought the names of these boxing champs were fantastic. So you've got Frank Moran, and then you've got Battling Jim Johnson and the Galveston Giant, and this Bermondsey local guy called the Young Nipper, and a guy called Willie Farrell, who apparently had a lovely singing voice.
Oh, okay.
I just thought, great image.
The Young Nipper sounds like somebody who'd be married to one of the 40 elephants, doesn't he?
Yes, totally. So it's all going well, but then, of course, First World War breaks out. So Dick Burge, being a sort of strapping young man still, he signs up and he survives the First World War, and then he dies of pneumonia in 1918. Oh, no. I know, yeah. Really sad. So he's quite a local legend. So actually 2,000 people go to his funeral. He has the funeral in Marylebone Parish Church. But on his deathbed, he says to Bella, will you take up the reins? Will you run the ring?
Run the ring, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a really nice story that she, like, the next night, you know, goes to the crowds and stands in the middle and says to the crowds, you know, this is what my husband's asked of me. Will you accept me as the owner? And they're all like, yay, yes, we will.
this really is a sweet Hollywood movie,
yeah,
isn't it?
I know. Well, there is an amazing biography by Leslie Bell called Bella of Blackfriars, even though it's not technically Blackfriars, you know, it's other side of the river, but never mind. So she kind of takes this on. You know, she hires other people who know about boxing, but she really is hands-on, you know. She isn't afraid of actually booting out, like, drunk troublemakers. She has her own mantra, which is to act, not argue, to be first and to be firm.
Brilliant.
Which I thought was quite
brilliant.
It's like, just get in there first if you've got some troublemakers. Yeah.
Swing a punch.
Yeah, and there was this, the crowds were pretty infamous. You know, one of the big things that they pushed for was having low price tickets because they wanted it to be for working class locals. But they also kept, you know, a firm hold on the tiller. So, you know, you get this sense that it was quite rowdy, but Bella was always kind of in control, making sure nothing kicked off. And there was this nice incident when, and I think she had a lot of respect as well. And there was this funny incident when somebody threw an apple core at the guy that was going to time out, you know, if someone's knocked out and they tap out. And the apple core knocked out the guy who was meant to do the timer. And the crowd thought this was hilarious and they joined in the countdown.
That's what they're making their apples of in the 1880s.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's quite a throw to
get that guy in the ring.
I know.
But yeah, she, so the other thing that she does that is very kind of groundbreaking, I suppose, is, you know, in 1910, it wasn't really acceptable for a woman to go to the boxing match. And because she's the promoter's wife and then later she's running it, she makes it fashionable for other women to come and visit, you know, come for a night out at the boxing. So she's appealing to this whole other audience, basically. And kind of gets to its peak, I think it's 1928, when none other than the Prince of Wales, later King Edward VIII, very short-lived, but King Edward VIII, came to the ring. And he'd personally requested this sort of fight between Jack Hood and Len Johnson. And it took place here, and he was sort of singing the praises of Bella. It's just kind of crazy.
Oh, goodness.
There you go. So
now it's funny you should mention.
Oh yeah.
What date was that?
So this was 1928, I think, when he visited.
Okay, it's funny you should mention him. He's popping up in my story as well.
Oh, getting about, love it. So basically, she makes it a huge success, and they're only basically stopped because of the Blitz. So the whole thing is bombed during the Second World War. in a massive raid. And so she kind of has to close up after that. To be fair, by the later 1930s, there are lots of competitors. So she has to pivot to make it a wrestling place, and actually goes back to kind of to the music hall roots. But the final straw is this bombing in the Second World War. But she has, I think, that classic sort of East End, kind of view of it, where she says, "So for 22 years, I conducted the business of the ring, and I'd still be in the saddle, but for Hitler getting a bee in his bonnet."
Amazing.
You just get such a good impression of her, I think. And she, what's really lovely is if you go opposite the former site of the ring, there is a pub called The Ring outside Southwark Station today. And there's all this memorabilia on the wall, including an article, the sort of farewell article of Bella Birch, which had this great quote from her. So kind of looking back in pride at what she'd done. And it said, "Haven't I the right to give myself a pat on the back for this? After all, I'm but a woman, and I take more pride in the fact that I was the only one in the ticklish business of fight promotion."
Oh, I like that.
Isn't it great? And then that's to cap amazing. It all off, she, in 1958, was on This Is Your Life.
Oh, that's yes. incredible. That's when you know someone.
You guys, you need to look up the pictures because they're so sweet. And some of, like, I don't think Mary Lloyd, but I think some of her sisters went. And she just is such a sweet. So she dies in the 1960s. She's 84. And she just seems like such a legend.
She does.
I did. I've seen the pictures already because I was looking them up earlier on. I was like, oh, look.
Is there, I guess there's footage of the of that This Is Your Life as well, is there?
I couldn't find video footage, but surely somewhere there must be.
You'd think so, although the BBC was not great about keeping everything in the early days, was it? They were a bit haphazard. So,
well, I've got a picture of This Is Your Life, but I don't think it's a video. She, do you know, given that she sort of like was born in New York, she looks like a proper East End lady, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you've been in Whitechapel age four, I think you're
gonna count. Yeah, so amazing. Yeah.
And Bermondsey, yeah, I thought you guys would like her.
Yeah, it also feels like there's quite a lot of boxing around Bermondsey, that it's, you know, so how delightfully alliterative of Bella Birch of Blackfriars doing boxing promotion. It's fabulous.
And there is a sort of a mosaic to her as well on the South Bank.
Yes.
Near the Purcell rooms, I think, because I remember seeing it before. It's not, I wouldn't say it's wildly flattering.
No, I looked that one up and went, ooh.
Yeah, not wildly flattering, but
some mosaics can be absolutely brilliant, but that one,
it's not, it's not.
No, she's sort of got a chin strap instead of a shadow, and it's a bit,
it's sort of weird shape, but anyway. Wow, well, fantastic. For the first of our three women for International Women's Day, Bella Birch, what an absolute legend. I love that. I didn't know much about her other than I'd seen her plaque or mosaic thing down on the South Bank, and I was like, on my list for someone to do at some point.
Same. Really only looking her up ahead of this is I hadn't heard of her at all before. So,
and again, listeners, you can find on the blog all the pictures, which is done diligently by Fiona every week. So go and have a look.
Yeah, deserves a film, I think.
She does. There's so many great stories that deserve films.
Oh, as you say, loads of the women you featured and stories you featured.
Yeah. Right, well, who goes next? Cool. Fiona, do you want to go?
Don't mind. I can dive in.
Go on then, crack on.
Okie dokie. Well, my lady is someone who, you know that thing where you see the name somewhere and then they just keep pinging up in all sorts of different ways. And she actually has quite a lot of things in common with Elizabeth Fry last week. One of them being that her son shares the name of my sister's hamster. So we got the family pet name.
So hang on, why is everyone being named after people related to Elizabeth Fry? Why are all the pets? So I'm going to have to rename my dog, aren't I? I'm going to have to rename him, like, I don't know, Fry, something like that.
I don't know. But, and I don't think it was necessarily the same. I think it's coincidental that my sister's hamster is named after. She's not named after her son. It's just they had the same name.
So what's the hamster called?
Moronzo.
Moronzo. That's a name.
Woronzo with a W.
Woronzo, even better.
Yeah. It was born in Woronzo Road in St John's Wood, this hamster. So that's why.
I mean, fine for the hamster. What about the person, though?
And is the road named after?
It's named after a Russian Count Vorontsov, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's a sort of corruption of a Russian name, but I think.
Was it named after her son?
Yes, so the person I'm talking about, her son was called Woronzo because her the person's first husband was Russian.
That's a flex, isn't it?
Anyway.
That is a flex.
First name, Woronzo,
or second name?
First name.
Wow. Okay.
She's also on a banknote.
Yay!
Like Elizabeth Fry. And I have to say, ladies, she's already won a public vote because there was a vote to see who should go on the Royal Bank of Scotland £10 banknote.
Oh, hello.
And it was Mary Somerville who got the public vote.
Oh, my goodness.
And she grew up in Scotland with a slightly haphazard bit, so quite minimal education. Her mum taught her to read, and then that was about it, and she was sort of left to her own devices. And then they kind of went, no, this isn't right, and sent her off to a quite posh boarding school for a year. And then she came home again and then was just kind of reading books in her father's library and things, and then later had a tutor and stuff as well. And she gets married at the age of 24. She gets married to her first husband, who was spectacularly unsupportive of her doing any
great
mathematical work and things. But they have two children in the 3 years that they are married before he dies. She's then able to go back to studying mathematics and things. And 5 years later, she marries again. And her second husband, William Somerville, is much more interested and much more encouraging. And they have four children. And
very encouraging.
Yes. He was a doctor, and for a while he was the physician of the Chelsea Hospital. They come down to London. So 1812, they arrive in London and are living in very, very nice company. Like, they know the scientists and the writers and the artists and all the lots of big names and things. She has quite a lot of contact, seems like, through her life with lots of people. I think she was quite a good letter writer and things. So they got involved with the Herschels, the astronomers, physicist Thomas Young, who is one of those names that we know as guides, but not necessarily as for his work as a physicist. He's the one who did the Rosetta Stone translation, decoding the writing on the Rosetta Stone. And Mary also friends with Byron, and very much a friend and sort of inspiration to Ada Lovelace. And it's Somerville, Mary, who introduces Ada Lovelace to Charles Babbage, who was another acquaintance. So
Where are they living
there
in London?
I think they lived for a bit in Chelsea and then in Hanover Square, I think, for quite a lot of time. So quite, nice. And her husband is a member of the Royal Society and things. So they're moving in this very nice kind of intellectual circles and things. But then he gets ill, so they do move to Italy. So 1838 onwards, they basically live in Italy for his health. But she still seemingly manages to exchange ideas with lots of people and things. And her first book that she wrote was actually she was commissioned to write a condensed version of a French astronomer's book about the solar system, which took 4 years to do.
That's quite a task to put to someone, isn't it?
Yes.
Could you just make this French astronomer's book into something smaller?
Exactly. Sure. Especially also if you take out chunks of the science, as it were, it might not make sense. But actually what happened, it wasn't quite as short as the person who commissioned it wanted it to be. So she then went to a different publisher and things and stuff. So that kind of got her lots of attention.
You don't need Saturn.
Yeah, you don't need that star, go on.
Yeah.
Out with you, Beetlejuice.
But kind of on the back of that, or around about that time, she, along with Caroline Herschel, they are the first women who are admitted to the Royal Astronomical Society. The first of many different societies that she becomes a member of over the years. And then her second book is called The Connection of the Physical Sciences, written in 1834, and is a mixture of kind of astronomy, geology, physics, meteorology, all sorts of different things. And in that, she speculates that one of the difficulties in calculating the position of Uranus is because there might be another planet kind of interacting with it, a planet that has not been discovered yet. And sure enough, someone else goes away and does a bit more work on this and goes, yes, this planet, Neptune. Oh. That's what's
casual
messing up all the calculations. And then she... so I sort of... I thought, rather than digging into all of the different scientific kind of stuff she did, I've gone through the books just because there's so much that she did that we'd be here all night kind of. But so the next book, Physical Geography, was revised 9 different times during her lifetime to kind of keep it updating with all the different, because, you know, the science is moving and things. But it was used as a sort of school textbook through the rest of the 1800s and things.
That's impressive.
Wow. And she lives a good long life as well. I think 91 eventually, which I always go, oh, same age as Christopher Wren.
That could not be a more Fiona's statement if I ever heard it. That's amazing.
She probably thought the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, she probably did.
I'm sure. Well, you know, mathematicians.
Both. True.
So,
true.
You know. She did do a lot of sort of calculus and things. At one point she said, yeah, mathematics as a field has been held back because lots of other people are too much in awe of Isaac Newton and therefore they're not using calculus enough. And things. So she had firm views on things and stuff.
Clearly.
And actually, delightfully, thinking about Newton as well, when she was young, when she was kind of left her own devices, she would go wandering around the fields and things near her house. And then after she'd come back from school, I think it was, she then was also, she said, well, I was no longer amused in the gardens, but I wandered about the country. And when the tide was out, I spent long hours on the sands looking at starfish and sea urchins and watching children dig for sand eels and blah, blah, blah. Aww. I made collections of shells, such as they were cast ashore, some so small that they appeared like white specks in patches of black sand. And there was a small pier on the sands for shipping limestone brought from the coal mines inland. I was astonished to see on the surface of these blocks of stone, covered with beautiful impressions of what seemed to be leaves. How they got there, I could not imagine, but I picked up the broken bits and even larger pieces and brought them to my repository.
Oh, interesting. So she's finding fossils, basically.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. And I love that because also Newton has that thing about, he says, I'm like a small child on a beach, you know, fascinated with a pebble. And there's a nice sort of echo of that there.
I didn't know that quote from him.
So. Yeah, he said, look, I'm like a child with a pebble or a seashell, I think, when in front of me lies an ocean of truth undiscovered.
Oh, wow.
And right in the middle of his two, his slab in Westminster Abbey, there is a fossil of a seashell. It's, I don't know if it's coincidental, but it's, I love it.
Oh, you come up with the best little bits of nuggets of information, Fiona. Yeah.
Definitely stealing that, Fiona.
Yeah, stealing that, not crediting you.
That's my favourite thing about Newton in the Abbey.
I love that.
And then she writes, there's another book on molecular and microscopic science. And she slightly regrets writing that one in some ways because she said, I shouldn't have spent so much time sort of popularising science. I should have stuck to the mathematics because I was really good at mathematics and I shouldn't have wasted my time sort of doing this book. But it seems like she is passionate about education and particularly educating women and things. And she is... one of the first uses of the word scientist is about her. Someone is describing her as a scientist.
Really?
And
that is cool.
And not even a women scientist. Scientist,
no,
a
just
scientist.
A scientist. Absolutely. And then after she dies, her posthumously, her autobiography and her sort of personal recollections and things is published. And I think in that there's probably quite a lot of interesting stuff about what she thinks about the world and you know. But she about 4 years before she died, so this is the 1860s, John Stuart Mill is putting together a petition for women's suffrage, and he quite consciously wrote to her first, and he said she should have the first name on this petition, should be hers.
Wow.
So
did she go for it?
She did. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes.
Good.
And she was born in 1780. And so then she eventually dies 1872. And there's, you know, that's a good lifetime in which a lot of things change. And
wow,
the
yeah.
position of women, you know, changed probably sort of quite a bit and things. Someone said her grasp of scientific truth in all branches of knowledge combined with an exceptional power of exposition made her the most remarkable woman of her generation.
Oh, I love it.
And she has a few things named after her, just a couple.
Okay.
So she has a room in the Scottish Parliament building. She has a house where she grew up in Scotland. She has a square that the house is on in Scotland. There's a club, kind of members club. There's a school, Somerville House, which is a high school for girls in Brisbane, Australia. There's a college, Somerville College in Cambridge, founded 1879.
As in Cambridge, not Cambridge University?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that one,
where
okay.
Margaret Thatcher studied, okay. but also Dorothy L. Sayers and Dorothy Hodgkin. So, you know, balance.
Yeah.
there's a ship, the Mary Somerville, that was launched in 1835. There's an island in the north of Canada named after her.
Oh, my goodness.
A satellite launched in 2022.
That's the one we want, isn't it?
An asteroid, as discovered in 1987. And a crater on the moon.
Oh, yes.
So she's not just an international woman. I have to say, she's a galactic woman.
That's incredible.
And I just thought of all
Very
her,
cool.
you know, that gives you an idea of the breadth of her interests as well. The fact she was doing kind of microscopes and, you know, astronomy and big planets and things is fabulous. And she says at one point, she's talking about mathematical problems. I said, I sometimes find mathematical problems difficult, but my old obstinacy remains. For if I do not succeed today, I will attack them again on the morrow.
Oh, I like
and
that.
And I thought that's a lesson for us all. Just
isn't it just
keep going at it. So,
oh my goodness. How did I not know about her?
Oh,
she's brilliant.
And I have to say this while Katie's a guest, because Alex, you might not get the reference. She pops up in one of the Rivers of London books.
I've read the first Rivers of London.
I forgot to look up what it's called. It might be False Values, but there's a Mary engine, which is named after Mary Somerville.
Of course. So I didn't realise that. Very good.
And they're here.
There she is.
About 2 days ago, I got given a Scottish banknote.
Did you really?
So I have
Just randomly,
I have it in my house. And I was like, that's it.
Photo of that on the blog.
Definitely
then.
Talking about her.
It's a sign. It's a sign.
So that's
it's a sign she's going to lose to my person. But yeah, cool. It's a sign. That's amazing. I like her. That's two absolutely brilliant women. Thank you both so much for them.
Yeah,
so who have you got? Who?
Well, I am going to talk about. So actually, we're bringing it back up to the dates that Katie was talking about, and we have a slight link to yours as well, Fiona, because this is yet another Ada.
Ah, okay.
And we talked about Ada Lovelace. This is the third Ada we've had on. I'm tempted at this point to genuinely rename the podcast Ada's Who London, because we've had Ada Salter, Ada Lovelace, and now Ada Coleman. I don't think we've had any other names crop up quite as much as that.
And it's not a massively common name, is it?
It's not. It's a beautiful name. My friend's daughter's named Ada, but amazing. And in true style, because this is me and I'm a lot less cerebral than you, I've gone for someone who is linked to booze. She was the head bartender at the Savoy for over 23 years and was dubbed England's most famous barmaid.
She's
quite interesting because, again, I think, you know, a lot of these women do things that now might be considered not so, you know, particularly interesting, although they're, you know, even so, no, I don't want to say interesting, not necessarily so notable, although she was there for over 23 years. But particularly at the time, again, women weren't allowed to do these things. She was she was born in 1875, and her father was a steward at the golf club belonging to one Rupert Doyley Cart. He is the son of the famous Richard Doyley Cart, who owned the Savoy, and then Rupert goes on to own it as well later. And actually, one of our listeners, I think it was Karen, I'm not quite remember now, I'll double check, did request an episode on Richard Doyley Cart. So
I tell you what,
that's on the list.
Ooh. Someone else wants to talk about Mrs. Doyley Cart, who doesn't get enough credit.
Right, we're doing a double doily.
We'll come back to
that's
the doilies.
What we're gonna do. So when her father died, actually really quite young, she was only 24 still, and so Rupert Doyley Cart offered her a job in one of his hotels, none other than the famous Claridge's, and she was in the flower shop. But she was so lovely and personable and great at her job that she very quickly progressed to being in the bar. And in all of the bartenders in London, there were about 55,000 men who were bartenders. Do you want to have a guess how many women there were?
Was it just her?
No, it wasn't just her.
Oh, okay. Three. Five.
A bit more than that, 150.
Oh, okay.
But out of 55,000 men and 150 women. And they weren't called bartenders, they were called barmaids.
Obviously.
And they tended to be daughters of tradesmen, mechanics, manual workers who didn't really have much money. And so the girls had to go out to the world, and they were in kind of slightly dire financial straits, and they had to go out and make their living. And they were long hours, but it was quite lucrative work, more lucrative than some other options. But even so, there were campaigns underway by some absolute fun sponges to stop the very few women who were working in bars, to stop them working there. It was deemed unseemly and immoral for them to work there. Luckily, they didn't work. So, you know,
set Mole, what's her name, on them. Mole King.
Yes, Mole King.
Right.
Set her on them and she'll
sort them out.
Oh my goodness, there were vigilante reforming societies at her time as well. But anyway, that's a topic for another day. So Ada was 24 when she took over this role. So she went into Claridge's at 24 and very quickly went into the bar, which is pretty good because the ads for female bartenders usually said, if you're over 25, you need not apply.
Oh.
Because clearly women over 25, very much on the shelf, in the dumper. And the first cocktail that Ada ever made, she said, was a Manhattan. She didn't know how to do it at all. She was coached by the wine butler of Claridge's, a guy called Fisher, who taught her how to make it. And very, very quickly, she was promoted to head bartender at the Savoy in 1903. Now, it's often said that she was the only female head bartender, but it's actually not quite true. There was another lady called Ruth Burgess, who was known as either Kitty or Miss B, who had started in 1902. But it seems to be that Ada's the one that made the history books. We're not quite sure why, because they both were head bartender there of their respective shifts for over 20 years. And some reports say that they actually never worked a shift together because Ada didn't want to give up her recipes, so she wanted to keep far away from Ruth Burgess. But it sounds like she was absolutely phenomenal at her job, and they loved her. All the guests loved her. So maybe that's why she became the kind of the name on the history books. But she was a true mixologist in the very truest form. She loved making new drinks and exciting mixes, and would often put things together that wouldn't necessarily go together, and she'd make it work. And she created her most famous drink, the Hanky Panky.
Oh,
the reason why it's on my list. for a very famous actor who was a comedic actor called Sir Charles Hawtrey, which may well be a name that is familiar to a lot of people. And he used to go there regularly. He was one of her most loyal customers, and you know, they loved each other an awful lot. And she said that he was the best judge of her cocktail. So if she made a duff one, he'd tell her. And he would say, yep, that doesn't work. Or, yeah, better on this, that and the other. And in 1925, around the time that she was retiring, she gave an interview to People magazine. And she said, her nickname, they all gave her a nickname of Coley. Ada Coleman, her nickname was Coley. And she said that he came in and he said, Coley, I'm tired. Give me something with a bit of punch in it. And so she went away and she spent ages, days, weeks experimenting. And then she said, I experimented until I'd created a new cocktail. She came up with the recipe for what has become a bit of a cocktail menu staple around the world. Now, I was thinking it would be quite good for me to be drinking one of these cocktails. However, I don't have hardly any of the things that go in it. So you need 45 mils of gin.
Mm-hmm. Good
45
start.
Mils
good
start. Of sweet vermouth.
Okay.
Two dashes of Fernet Branca, which is a got a bit of a kick to it. And as a garnish, an orange twist. And that's the bit that the mixologists say really pulls the flavours together. And she gave it to Charles Hawtrey. He took his first sip and he declared, "By Jove, this is the real hanky panky." Now, nowadays, hanky panky to us is a bit of a, it's a bit, bit naughtier. It means, you know, a bit of slap and tickle, a bit of how's your father, a bit of a, you know, yeah, grapple around the back of the bike shed, that kind of thing. But at the time, is that ringing bells for you, Katie? Katie's just lost it.
You just kept going. I didn't know how many you had.
Oh, I've got many, many more. But anyway, so yeah, he said, so what it meant back then, it didn't necessarily mean, you know, having a quick one. It was, it just referred to something that was really, really good. So he just said, "Oh, that, this is the real hanky panky." So it set in, and so she's doing the bartending at the American Bar at the Savoy, which still exists today. I'm sure people are very familiar with it. And American bars were all the rage, and she got a huge reputation. And a chap called the Earl of Lonsdale, who I only know through there being a pub called the Earl of Lonsdale.
Lonsdale boxing? Can we make this a link factor?
Maybe.
Don't know. Anyway,
not with any. Confidence.
Fair enough.
Let's go with, yeah. He said, he described her in an interview, and he said she was so nice and so kind and so full of life and energy. And some of her famous guests, she had people like Mark Twain, Marlene Dietrich, Charlie Chaplin, and ding, 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 the Prince of Wales, the future Edward VIII, who came there as well. So he seems to have just gone out boozing and to boxing matches. So, no. Yeah. Hey ho. And she was famous for not just being the head bartender, but also for throwing some pretty awesome cocktail parties at her home. And she invited people from a whole heap of different social backgrounds, and they all mixed together, and they all, you know, let's be really ridiculous about it, they created a cocktail of their own.
Oh,
I went there. Yes,
nice.
I
went.
It was also asked, when Ted Hughes was asked about to comment about her, and he said, not only was Coley a woman in the world of male bartenders, it was she who made the bar famous. So the American Bar is still incredibly famous today. And I've anyone been for cocktails?
Yes.
There? I've been once.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
You've been, Katie?
Maybe twice. I've been.
I'm not sure I have, actually. Yeah. So it's...
Right. Oh. We're going to have a little Ladies Who London outing. We have cocktails at the American Bar.
Yes.
And she was so famous. I mean, you just think she's a bartender. I mean, she's a bartender at one of the most famous hotels in the world. She's also an amazing bartender, but she's a bartender. And when she retired in 1926, several papers covered her retirement.
Yeah.
And in 2016, that famous website that we all visit all the time, liquor.com, I'm on it nonstop, named Ada Coleman one of the 9 most important bartenders of all time.
Very good.
And her drink, Hanky Panky, went on to be listed as one of the top 50 best-selling cocktails in 2015. And it's said that she's still, to this day, one of the best bartenders in the industry. And her sort of legend lives on. She died in 1966 at age 91. So she's very similar.
91?
In
same as Christopher Wren.
Bella Burgess. Oh, my God.
And he loved a Hanky Panky.
No, I'm going to forget that now.
Oh, he would have.
The hanky and the panky for Christopher. So there we go. So that's Ada Coleman, our gin bartender. What a wonderful woman.
And I always think, but like, it's very one of those cool jobs that needs quite different skills. There's the mixing, the recipe side of it, and then there's the whole being the host of the bar side of it.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
To do both is, yeah.
And, you know, nowadays, especially, there are some really famous bartenders. I mean, you look at Eduardo Palazzi from the... No, that's not the right guy, is it? No, he's the sculptor.
He's the sculptor.
Thingy.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ignore that because I can't remember his name. It's Palazzi something. Anyway. But yeah, bartenders now are the sort of, you know, really famous ones that get huge social media attention and all that kind of thing. So imagine what she'd have been like. And the photos of her, she looks so lovely. She looks so friendly. She's got an amazing, charming smile, standing behind the bar, looking just fabulous. So there we go.
I was looking at images for the blog, and there aren't many photos of her. There might just even be the one.
I've only found the one, I think.
But she does look remarkably like the Impressionist painting.
I was thinking
which
that.
Is just around the corner in the
yes,
you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it's a sort of conscious echo of that, which may or may not be true, I don't know. But it's quite nice that if you go to pop into what's it called?
Courtauld.
The Courtauld, that's the one.
Gallery, yeah.
And then retire to the Savoy for drinks. That's
absolutely
the way to do it.
And actually that image, that the Folie Bergère, has been on Twitter quite a lot lately, because I don't know if anyone saw the hilarity of the terrible Wonka experience somewhere in the UK. I can't remember where it was now. And there was a photo taken of one of the Oompa Loompas who just looked so depressed and like she was in a meth lab. And it very much kind of was, it looked like that incredible painting. And I think even the Courtauld were like, hang on a minute. It's brilliant. So yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah.
So there we go. There's our three ladies for International Women's Day. Gang, you can go and vote. We're going to put a poll up whether Fiona likes it or not. You can, if you want, Fiona, put a fourth one that says they're all fabulous.
Okay.
You can have a get out of jail free card. But we should say that the reason we had the lovely Katie Wignott on for this week is not only that you do a lot of women's history, but you have something rather special that's just been launched, haven't you?
Yeah, so it's actually being released on Friday, which is... Mm-hmm. International Women's Day, and it is the Women's History London Map. So it's with Blue Crow Media, and they do these beautifully designed fold-out maps and lots of subjects of different things. They've done a Black History one. They've got kind of niche London Underground design that's right up your
very
street,
nice.
Fiona.
Yes.
But yeah, I've written the Women's History one, so it features 50 statues and sculptures and plaques and little hidden details, street names, things like that, about inspiring women across London. So it has all the locations and a little bit about each woman, and you can go and explore them out on this map.
Fabulous. Amazing. Who have you got? So we've got Bella Burge on there.
Do you know what? I don't think she is on there. I thought about this today and I was like, do you know how hard it was? Because you think 50, there's loads.
Yeah.
And then you get down to it and it was so tricky. And I tried to have a real mix. You know, you've got people like Millicent Garrett Fawcett and Afra Behn and Virginia Woolf and Phyllis Wheatley. But then I also wanted to have... different people who you might not have come across, and as guides also, I wanted there to be a really definitive visual tie-in, you know, a plaque or a statue or something
to go
that
and look
you
at.
Can go and find. So it was tricky, you know, trying to find the list.
Did they cluster together? Did you have to kind of make sure they were spread out across London as well, or was that?
I tried to have a range. We were trying to have them centrally, but as you can see, I kind of failed because on the map, there's sort of arrows out. There's like, oh gosh, here she goes. Like there's one, a few in Chelsea and things like that. But they had a special photographer go out and take all the pictures. So I've been sent the proofs and it just looks really lovely. So I'm really, really happy with it. And it's in nice suffragette branding colours. So
excellent.
Love it. That's fabulous. Yeah.
So go on then. What's the, how much of our hard-earned cash have we got to have to part with for this beauty?
Oh, it is $9.95, I think.
Oh, that's a snip.
Just on the website. Yes. Yeah, such
and
a
what
bargain.
And what is the website?
Yeah, so you can buy it from Blue Crow Media. I'll probably pop it on my website as well, lookup.london. But the publishers is bluecrowmedia.com.
Pop it on our blog as well.
Yeah, if you just search Women's History London Map, it probably pop up as well. But
congratulations.
Oh, fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Yay, wonderful. Right, well, before we finish, is there... Oh, actually, Katie, are you coming to our live podcast on the 20th of March?
I absolutely am.
Yay!
I'm so excited. I sought permission, night off from the 2-year-old. So I am, there with bells on.
I'm hoping Doglet will be there as well.
Yay. Yeah, I've read Leo's book, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, yes. I'm partway through the book. It's going to be great. I can't wait.
The tap is very much dog friendly, even during events.
Yeah.
And when I asked about it, Dan said, yeah, it was really nice the other day. We had lots of dogs and no toddlers at all. So
That's the dream.
I have to say, for a tap room, there is remarkably large number of children in prams in there sometimes as
That's
well.
So funny.
It's a lovely place.
It's coming up. Oh my goodness, it's like, what, 3 weeks away? 2 weeks away? Yeah. Exciting and scary. So yeah, if anyone hasn't got your tickets, why not? If you loved us, you would have bought them by now. but yeah, we're looking forward to seeing. I think we're doing very well on tickets. I don't think there's that many left, are
No, there? There's a few, but not that many. So yeah, if you're debating whether to come or not, come.
It'll be great. It'll be great fun. There'll be a dog and probably cake.
Ooh.
What more could you want?
Yay. A cake shaped like a dog? A dog shaped like a cake?
Definitely dog shaped. Like, in fact, he's shaped a bit like a croissant. Curls up in a little way. Anything else before we go, Fiona? Anything else we'd say?
No, don't think so.
All right. Go and look at the blog, gang. There's pictures of all these wonderful women up there. Check the socials for the poll if you want to, you know, be involved in the death battle between the three fabulous women. And go and check out Katie's new map for International Women's Day. And ladies, have a wonderful day.
Yes.
I hope you feel as international and as woman as you would want to on that day. Right, I'm off to make myself a hanky-panky.
Absolutely.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.